of me. I never knew that I could hurt this way. Heartache number two was when you came back again. You came back and never meant to stay. Now I've got heartaches by the numbers, troubles by the score.
Keller trying to close the wall, McLeod back on it. Feeds a hit for Joseph. Joseph splits the knee, works in, Joseph scores! Matthew Joseph! 4-2 Canada! Now McAvoy works in, McAvoy feeds it across, Bellows shoots, scores! Keeper Bellows has his second, and the United States is back within one. Clayton Keller back with it, being harassed by Clegg, plays it back. Long shot, tip, score! Colin White gets a stick on it, and the game is tied at 4. Terry. Shoot, scores! 4 for 4 in shootouts in 2 days, and the United States has the lead.
He's gone through the 5-hole 4 times.
Ball works in. Deke Parsons makes the stop, and the United States has won the gold medal in Montreal. World Junior Champions with the win of the shootout.
I saw the information. I read the information outside of that meeting. It's all fake news.
Welcome back. Hour number 4, and it's game night. Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo. The last time we heard Gord Miller was that incredible gold medal game at the World Junior Hockey Championship right here at the Bell Center with us every Wednesday at 6:05. Happy New Year. Welcome back. How you doing?
Good. Aren't you going to run my little ad?
The ad is no more.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. Wrangler didn't like your work. I don't know. I don't even know why I mentioned them. Hey, Levi's, where are you, man? Come on. Levi's, or what do you wear? What do you wear? Guess? What do you wear? What
kind of jeans? I do wear Guess or Buffalo.
Buffalo?
Yeah.
A true Quebecer.
Too much information. Honestly, seriously, we're forgetting.
Yeah. So, we had Ray. Ray returned to us yesterday. He's in the middle of his bye week, as you know. And he said, oh, geez, thanks. 5 days off. I finally got rid of Gordon. I have to hear him describe those goals all over again.
That's a burden he has to carry.
Yeah. But seriously, this is our first opportunity to talk to you about it. And, we all, as I say, every time we talk about something that is so great and memorable, is we all tend to have short memories. But seriously, in all your time, there's no better person to ask than you when it comes to the World Junior Hockey Championship and these gold medal games. Where would you put that one?
Unbelievably compelling. The greatest World Junior Games I've seen are that one, 2011, the Russian comeback against Canada, the 2010 game, the Carlson overtime winner for the U.S., which are, funny, all losses. But some of the greatest games I've ever seen, the Eberle game in 2009 was a tremendous hockey game. The shootout win by Canada against the United States in 2007. Never mind the shootout and Taves and all that. The penalty kill in overtime by Canada against the U.S. was extraordinary. Letang went off, and Canada killed off the penalty. So it's really hard to say which one's the best. I think the best gold medal game I've seen was probably the 2015 game in Toronto, the Canada-Russia game. The early lead and the Russian comeback was probably the best game I've seen.
We wanted a different ending, but going in a shootout like this it's part of the rules. But, we had our chances. We were right there.
Sorry to cut you off there. I wanted to get into the fact that they are apparently talking about changing this rule now with the shootout.
Yeah, I mean, so they changed it last summer. They went back to 5-on-5 in overtime for the overtime period. There's a couple of issues, and I get why people don't like the shootout, and I totally understand it. There's a couple things you have to understand. Number one, the IHF has to apply the same rules to all of its competitions. So the rules that for the World Championship, the World Junior Championship, are the same rules for the women's under-18s, the World Junior Division C, everything else. So there are times when asking players to play potentially back-to-back overtime games is too much. So, for example, the Americans had played the day before in overtime. So to go overtime shootout, then overtime shootout again, To ask them to play 4-on-4 or 3-on-3 is a lot. Secondly, these tournaments have to have a finite ending. For example, at the Olympic Games, the gold medal game in hockey can't go on forever because the closing ceremonies are going to happen. Right? So there has to be a finite end to it. Would I like to see? I'd like to see 4-on-4 for 20 minutes in overtime. I think that would be a better solution. I've heard people say 3-on-3. Here's the interesting thing about 3-on-3, because Patrick O'Sullivan made a good point the other day on Twitter about how to him losing in 3-on-3 is just as gimmicky as losing in a shootout. There are more penalty shot goals scored in regulation time in NHL games than 3-on-3 goals.
Hold on a sec. Say that again. First of all, what you said about somebody making sense on Twitter, that's an ear opener.
I know. But penalty shot, there are more penalty shot goals in regulation time than 3-on-3 goals. You almost never see a 3-on-3 goal in regulation time.
Oh, right? Regulation time. Okay, I got you. Yeah. Well, you never see 3-on-3 in regulation. How often do you even see it in regulation?
Right, you almost never see it. So to say that 3-on-3 is more of a hockey play than a shootout, is it really?
Okay, but it's closer to 5-on-5 than 1-on-1.
Right, but what I'm saying is penalty shots happen more than 3-on-3 goals. I mean, I don't love the shootout. I would say this, I'm a soccer fan. The World Cup settles the most important soccer games of all with a shootout. We've seen lots of shootouts in important games.
Yeah, it's dumb.
Well, what's your answer?
Keep playing.
Because this tournament had to have an end.
Yeah, but why? Well, you just pushed the closing ceremonies back. You think they're going to play for another 3 hours without scoring? Let's get into the percentage of games that are more than, into double overtime or more in the history of, right, you know.
5-on-5, lots of them.
So what are they discussing, Gordon?
You have to understand, it doesn't sound right to us, but these tournaments are staffed by volunteers. And again, it's not a big deal at the World Junior Championship in Montreal. But at the Division C, women's under 18, it's a different situation. And the IHF rules have to be applied to all different tournaments.
So what are they discussing then?
Going back to 4-on-4 in overtime.
Okay. All right. And 4-on-4 for...
20 minutes.
Same thing. Okay.
For 20 minutes. So what would happen is in the medal round, the quarterfinals, semifinals would be 10 minutes of overtime, and then a shootout, and the overtime. The gold medal game would be 4-on-4, and the gold medal game is the only 5-on-5 overtime.
Mm-hmm. And that would remain.
It would stay 20 minutes, but they'd go to 4-on-4.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, we endorse it. Now it can get done. Gord, part of what makes the tournament so amazing, as you know, is like coaches haven't polluted the kids. Like there are still mistakes being made. They find a way to have confidence out there. Do you think, unfortunately, we may get to a point where coaches are able to implement their kind of ironclad discipline and structure?
Do you have kids, Rod?
No. No, he doesn't.
Yeah. So you try ironing the emotion out of 17, 18, and 19-year-olds. Good luck. No, I mean, what makes the tournament special isn't that it's not so much the coaches haven't polluted them yet. It's that they're kids, and they're so emotional. Because when the good things happen to them, it's the best thing that ever happened. When bad things happen, it's the worst thing that ever happened. And anyone who's ever had teenagers knows that's exactly what they're like, and they're not going to change. It's why the NCAA tournament is quite often more compelling than the NBA, and it's why this tournament, in a lot of cases, is more compelling than the NHL, because they're kids, and the peaks and valleys are so pronounced.
Do you think it's more compelling than the NHL?
I think in a lot of cases the games are, yeah. I think that, professionals are a lot more even-keeled than kids, and I think that the best-of-seven nature of series makes it more of a long haul. I mean, the better team will win more often. Single elimination is a great format, and we've seen it at the Olympic Games and elsewhere. I mean, Olympic athletes always laugh at best of seven, right? Because in most of their sports, you get one crack at it, right? You don't get it's not best of seven in the hurdles. It's one race.
I had a lot of discussion with Hockey Canada. They're going to change a little bit their policy for 2019. I think it's a good signal also for Buffalo next year.
All right, so before putting it to bed for another year, Renny Fossil, afterwards, the ticket prices, what was the experience like for you personally, seeing all those empty seats here and what they may, in fact, have learned for Buffalo?
Well, first of all, you know, I've said it before, Montreal and Quebec are is a unique market, and there are lots of things that sell in Montreal and Quebec that don't sell anywhere else, and there's lots of things that sell everywhere else that don't sell in Montreal, and we've seen tons of examples of it. So I think the prices were high there. It's not a great junior hockey market. It never has been. And I remember in the early 2000s, at the time George Gillette bought the Canadiens, when they were playing lots of empty seats. So to think that Montreal is a bulletproof market is not accurate, and I think they overpriced it. The fact is they sold the tickets at the same prices in Alberta and sold them out, and Toronto sold them out in 2015, is immaterial. It doesn't matter. It doesn't make Montreal a bad city. It just means it didn't sell there. It's not a bad thing. U2, my understanding is U2 is not going to Montreal because their last show didn't sell very well there.
No, that's not true. No. No, they played two nights here with 160,000 people. They built their own stage. They're not.
Right, but didn't they have to drop the ticket prices?
I don't know. Well, all I remember is I paid a ton for lousy seats. That's all. That's all I remember.
So you know, I mean, it's
there are a lot of acts that do not play here. That's correct.
And I don't buy into this sort of narrative that it crap on Montreal or whatever. It didn't work there. It's worked lots of other places. The ticket prices in Buffalo are much lower, and because NHL tickets are much lower in Montreal than they are in Buffalo than they are in Montreal.
Right.
I mean, the Sabres' average ticket price, I believe, is $62. That's their average price.
What's the average price of a ticket here?
Well, I can tell you this: the gate receipt report is confidential for the NHL, so it's not the attendance; it's the actual money that teams take in per game. The Canadians are inching up towards $2 million a game.
I remember
Buffalo
when it was a million.
Less than half that.
I remember when it was a million. Yep.
So okay. Toronto's number one. I think Montreal's two or three. The Rangers are up there, but Buffalo would be less than half that.
Well, I hope fans got their money's worth, whatever they paid the other night.
What's my takeaway from the Montreal World Junior? It's fantastic.
All right, period.
Backstrom one more time. Finds Ovechkin, scores, and he ties Rocket Richard with goal number 544, Alex Ovechkin.
The man who has won the Rocket Richard Trophy, what, five times, six times, how many times? Six. And so he's tied with him, and he goes into the game tonight against Crosby and the Penguins on NBC Sports Rivalry Night, 1 point shy of 1,000.
Yeah.
Getting a lot of love right now.
And I think only Brett Hull had more goals when he hit 1,000 than Ovechkin.
Do you understand why, until he wins a Stanley Cup, there are people who are going to knock him because he hasn't won a Stanley Cup?
I understand why they're saying it. It's a nonsensical argument.
Of course it is.
But I understand why people say it. This is a 30-team league now. To say that a player is solely responsible for his team not winning the Stanley Cup is to condemn Gilbert Perreault, Brad Park, and a host of other great players. And I've said this to you before, if you think Stanley Cups are the measure of individual worth, then you think Murray Wilson was better than Doug. And we all love Murray, but Doug was a better player.
Yeah, Doug should probably be in the Hall of Fame.
He's probably the best player who's not in it.
Yeah.
So, to me, the issue with Ovechkin is, not the issue, he's a great player, he's a Hall of Fame player. Has he ever done anything to cost his team a win? Not that I've seen. The Caps just haven't broken through in a 30-team league. But what I do take umbrage with is the suggestion, and I haven't seen it yet, so I shouldn't quote it without seeing it, but it was pointed out to me today on Toronto radio that someone in the Hockey News wrote that comparing Ovechkin to Rocket Richard isn't fair to Ovechkin because he's that much better. I find that incredible.
Well, the first mistake you made was quoting someone in the Hockey News.
Right. Okay. So you can argue who's a better goal scorer. Go ahead and have that discussion. I'm not sure there's an answer to it. There's no discussion who's the more important player. Rocket Richard is one of the most important players in NHL history.
Of course, and I know you'd say that no matter where you were, because he transcends hockey where we are. But this whole notion is that what people, you know, I've had this discussion with people on and off the air over the years, Gord. People see clips of these old players, right? And the game looks slow. That you can't transport somebody who played in the 50s or the 60s or even the 70s and drop them into 2017 and say that's the speed they'd be playing at. It's ridiculous.
You can't, except you can say, if you want to try that argument, he had 100 more goals when he retired than anyone else who had played. So if you want to try that argument, go ahead. But what I'm saying is, if you want to discuss importance, it's not even close. Like, I mean, the Rocket transcends. There are very few athletes who transcend their sport. The Rocket does. Gretzky does. Gordie Howe does. Muhammad Ali, Arnold Palmer. They transcend their sport. The Rocket launched the cultural revolution, the quiet revolution in Quebec. Like, really, he's such a gigantic figure culturally, you can't even make the comparison. And someone wrote something in and again, I'm quoting something that I only read in glancing, was when Ali died, and said, actually, Joe Louis was a better fighter. Okay, sure, go ahead and make that discussion. In terms of importance, I mean, it's not even close.
Yeah, I suppose maybe if you're 28 years old, you think the world started when you were born.
I read on NFL.com that Joe Montana was overrated.
Well,
you know, I hear people saying...
Meryl Streep is overrated. Yeah, same thing.
Oh, don't go quoting that guy. Jonathan Toews. I hear the argument that Jonathan Toews is overrated, like one of the most overrated players of the last decade. I spoke to Bruce Boudreaux today on Toronto Radio, and he said, in game 6 and 7 against us in Anaheim, he was the best player in the world. Like, I find it incredible that people, and again, we've had this, and I know Rod's probably rolling his eyes right now, but if you want to boil people down to the numbers, go right ahead, but you're missing the point. You're missing the point.
I'm just wondering, Gord, back to the people who make the argument that Ovechkin, the whole Stanley Cup argument that somehow defines how great a player he is. Do you think those people or people in general would look at Ovechkin differently if he was Canadian?
You know, there's an element to that for sure. I think the fact that he's Russian for sure has worked against him. He's a great hockey player. He's the greatest goal scorer of his generation. Wayne Gretzky was the greatest goal scorer of his generation, then Brett Hull, and now Alex Ovechkin. I don't know how you can fault an individual, unless you're saying he doesn't score in the playoffs, which isn't the case. You know, has he failed in big moments when they've counted on him? I haven't seen that. There's a whole bunch of things that go into winning a championship, and a lot of things have to go your way, and sometimes they don't, and you keep knocking on the door and hope you break through. And you know, maybe one of these years Washington will, but what amazes me is if he wins the cup, does that suddenly, you know, validate him as a player? Does that validate 15 years in the NHL? No, of course not. It's a ludicrous argument. I mean, did Ray Bourque have to win the cup in Colorado to be considered one of the greatest defensemen in history? Of course not.
Sure was nice to see him win it, though.
Okay, don't get me wrong.
No, I know.
Things are separate. I'll say this again. I hope in our lifetime that wins for goalies, starting pitchers, and quarterbacks no longer become considered important stats, and that championships for individuals are no longer considered measures of their worth.
I'm glad you took me there to finish up, because we're about to hear from an overrated quarterback.
As we've seen in the draft for years, the things you can't measure are the things that separate the good players from the great players, or the busts from the guys who make their GMs and their personnel people look really good. Perfect example is Dak Prescott. I think we all know how well he's played this year. It's the things you can't measure that can separate you at the quarterback position.
Aaron Rodgers on the Dan Patrick Show. Gord Miller, you got to see Aaron Rodgers and the Packers at Lambeau Field.
Amazing. An amazing afternoon. I wound up going I had to go to Chicago on the Saturday. NBC asked me to do a game at Notre Dame. And a friend of mine works for the Giants and said, well, why don't you come up to our game the next day? It's only a 3-hour drive from Chicago. So I went up and went to Lambeau Field. I'd never been. And what an experience. I mean, it's honestly, it's a football stadium dropped into Westmount. Like, just picture a residential neighborhood with a, you know, or Greenfield Park, whatever, like, with a football stadium right in the middle of it. I parked in a person's driveway a block and a half from the stadium. And then you walk in, and it's just extraordinary. It was a great experience. It was cold, but I'm so glad I went. It was just a phenomenal, phenomenal experience.
Don't you love Gort's local drop-in references? He realizes he's not on Toronto radio, even though he's mentioned it like five times already. Nice to be able to spawn your burgeoning radio career in your in the home market.
I don't have a home market. I'm from Alberta, remember?
Oh, yeah.
But I'm glad to be back. Should I go out and find a sponsor?
Yes, by all means.
How about Chico's bail bonds?
I think Rod wanted to ask you something about, because, you know, he's such a football fanatic.
Yeah, I am a football junkie. And ironically, a lot of Montrealers go to Ralph Wilson Stadium, or New Era Field, as it's now known. Yeah. And it's a similar situation there in Orchard Park, where you pay someone $10 and you park in their front yard. But I've got this image of Lambeau Field basically as a football shrine, Gord.
It really is. And I think that when the difference is when you drive up, you realize that this stadium, while renovated, has stood in the same spot for this long, and so many things have happened there. And it's a city of 170,000 people. So basically, when the football team plays, 50,000 people come from outside Green Bay and Milwaukee to go to games. And it's an extraordinary experience. And it's the people that go there are passionate about it. You can't get tickets. It's not a privately owned team. It's a community owned team. The proceeds, after they pay all their expenses and maintain everything, go to charity. It's an extraordinary thing. I was on the rental car bus in Chicago going to get my car, and a guy there was decked out in Packers gear. I said, "Are you going to the game?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Me too." I said, "Any advice for a newcomer?" He said, "Did you book a parking spot?" I said, "No." He said, "Oh, let me call my Aunt Eva." So he called Aunt Eva and then gave me her address, and that's where I parked. And she had bratwurst on the grill, potato salad.
Wow.
And then I walked a block and a half to the stadium, and when I was leaving, I called the house, and my car was started when I got back.
How about getting Aunt Eva to sponsor your Wednesday?
I don't know that Aunt Eva's a little on the old side.